Hello and welcome to Vontobel Quality Growth's Emerging Market Equity Review Podcast. I'm Ben Falcone, Client Portfolio Manager, alongside with Jin Jang, our Deputy Portfolio Manager of Vontobel Quality Growth Emerging Markets. Welcome, Jin.
Glad to be here.
So, Jin, to kick it off, look, late into the third quarter as well into the fourth quarter, emerging markets have rallied. But a little bit different, right? It's not so much been in the consistent, reliable growth companies that we had seen, say, over the past 12 to 18 months prior, and really on, you know, the hopes of this kind of phase one trade deal with China and more, you know, better sentiment around that. So we've seen areas like semiconductor equipment and components have been outperforming more stable, less volatile areas like staples or IT service businesses. You know, do you think this is a game-changing event? And I guess, how do you manage for the future, you know, around this event?
Is it a game-changing event? Not really. To me, a game changer would be a deal that removes the uncertainties in the world, you know, around the tariffs, the decoupling of the U.S. and China economies, about the supply chain, all those things, right? So we don't really have that. So, you know, if you look at the deal, right, it is a positive, right? You know, small deal is still a positive. But I think the market understands that going forward, phase two will be pretty difficult. And all these uncertainties in the world is just not really removed. So if you look at the market rally, right, I think you are right. When the market was trading up in anticipation of the deal, some of the lower quality, lower priced equities have outperformed. So the better, higher quality companies did not outperform. But looking forward with these uncertainties, I think we're still better off to stay with the higher quality ones.
Okay. Yeah, but, you know, because of this new environment that we are in, I mean, supply chains are changing, and it doesn't seem like this is the type of thing that's going to derail that once you've started that process. And so we have seen, you know, some countries that have been struggling in a slower growth environment because of, you know, a slowdown in trade, because of the trade war issue, like a Korea, for example, you know, is going through some of its slowest growth it's seen since the 1950s when it was keeping track of, when it started keeping track of its GDP growth. But then you've also seen countries like Taiwan that has been growing, you know, actually hasn't missed a beat and has been improving. So how do you, you know, wrap your hands around countries that have been benefiting and countries that aren't?
I think you're right. You know, different countries have felt different impact, right, from the trade war and the uncertainties. So Korea, as you mentioned, right, it's a very much export-oriented economy. It was hit pretty hard. On the other hand, you have Taiwan, right, which is directly benefiting from the trade uncertainties because a lot of businesses have pulled back from the mainland of China and, you know, built plants and hired people in Taiwan, right? So it is a beneficiary in this uncertainties. But I would say that is more the exception. You know, if you look at the trade war, the short-term impact clearly is negative. A lot of uncertainties means businesses have pulled back from, you know, making decisions, from expanding. If we think longer term, things are somewhat different. There are beneficiaries. So I would say in addition to Taiwan, right, Southeast Asia is actually sitting pretty well. So those countries have decent industrial base. And if the trade war and these uncertainties continues, what happens is some of the lower-end manufacturing will continue to move to those countries. So we're talking about textile and maybe, you know, electronics, some of the auto and auto parts industries. So lower to mid-end, those industries will move to the Southeast Asian region. So if you have good exposure, you know, to those countries, I think you will do well. So one example I will give is UOB, United Overseas Bank, which is based in Singapore, but have businesses in the region. This is an example of businesses that are well positioned for the future.
I see. So a business that's in one of these countries, and not necessarily, you're not gaining exposure to someone that's directly impacted, but it has good indirect impact, right? A more sustainable maybe economy for a longer period of time might open up some quality opportunities is what you're saying, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So staying in Asia, but talking about more of a closed economy, which has been in the headlines a lot, has been India. India doesn't rely as much on exports for growth, but it has slowed significantly. Actually, their growth is the slowest in the Modi era. And the main culprit has been because of a lack of credit growth. So over the last, you know, year or so, credit within the non-bank financial companies, which accounts for about 20% of overall lending, you know, has been an issue and has dried up. And there has been, you know, major defaults there. And just recently, a nationalization of one of the larger NBFCs, Daewon Housing Finance. But the government, on the other hand, has also been active in terms of its support by cutting rates and injecting money into government banks and providing, you know, credit guarantees for banks purchasing these NBFC loans. So they're trying to free up liquidity. I guess there's two ways to look at this. You know, is this a symptom of a difficult environment going forward, or is this the beginning of stabilization, you know, in the future?
I think it is more of the latter. You know, it is the start of a stabilization and a potentially higher growth. So if you think about the growth trajectory of India, right, it did have a meaningful slowdown. The slowdown happened actually before the election, but became more accelerated after the election. The Reserve Bank of India, the central bank, has been managing the process fairly effectively. So what we have seen is in the non-bank financing segment, there has been issues, like you mentioned, but at the same time, there has not been contagion. If anything, the better run organizations, the ones with stable funding and good asset quality, they have performed well. You know, for example, Housing Development Finance Corporation, so-called HDFC, it has really done well. There's no meaningful slowdown at all. If anything, you know, it is really well positioned to take market share from the weaker ones you mentioned. So in terms of the process, I think we're close to the end of it. We're seeing some green shoots. So I do expect the growth to start to accelerate from here. And like you said earlier, right, India is more insulated from the rest of Asia, the rest of all these trade war-related volatility. So by holding on to these well-run organizations, you do get the benefit of diversification.
Yeah, I think it's a good point that you make, right? In a contagion event, right, you would see the whole industry having issues, whereas this, you're seeing actually some of the better run businesses continuing to do well.
Perform fairly well.
Yeah, at the expense of some of their weaker peers. A good point. I guess, you know, it wouldn't be emerging markets if we didn't talk about some political unrest as well and some social issues. So I know you were just recently in Hong Kong and there we're going through, of course, a lot of protests. Testing, and it's also been a pretty weak market. Any candid observations from your trip there?
Yeah, but I'd say in general, I think the situation is not as bad as it seems on the screen. You know, I think what most people will see are really just, you know, the most extreme situations. The city is largely, you know, functional rather than dysfunctional. But that said, I think there are some deep-seated issues there. You know, the rift in that society is just very troubling, and it's hard to really get resolved quickly. So overall, you know, I don't really see, you know, like a lot of opportunities. The equity value there haven't really corrected all that much. See, if you look at Hong Kong, right, the size of the economy is actually less than 3% of the total of China. So it's actually not that big. So I think economically and even politically, I don't really see a spillover onto the mainland. When you look at China as a whole, right, it is a very large economy, and it is actually also diversified. The coastal areas are fairly different from the inland, and the tier one, tier two cities are different from the tier three and tier fours. So if you look at a business like Alibaba, for example, right, it's in the e-commerce business, it has a dominant position there, but it is actually getting very good growth in the lower tier cities and even in the rural areas, right? So if you find the right opportunity, I think that's the right way to invest there.
Of course, there's not just unrest in Asia, but there's also unrest if we go towards Latin America. And this region has underperformed, you know, emerging Asia over the past few years as well. So, you know, how do you think about having exposure there?
Yeah. So I think here the key word is selective. You know, you want to be selective about the country. You want to be selective about what business you want to invest in. So if you look at the region, right, Brazil stands out. Brazil is actually still on the right track. It has given the left-leaning party its opportunity, right? The PT, the left-leaning party, have run the country for 16 years and didn't really have much to show for that. So now they are on a different track, different administration, and they are on a track of reform and growth. So if you look at earlier this year, when Argentina was sort of blowing up, right, they actually use the opportunity to push the pension reform through their Congress. So that's interesting, right? Because in a sense, all this turmoil in the neighborhood served as an underpin for their reform drive, right? So I think they're on the right track. Now, if you look forward, and can I, you know, guarantee you that they will not have protests and demonstrations? I cannot, right? You know, protests have happened. But on the other hand, you know, I think they have very good institutions and they're on the right track to drive reforms and deliver growth. So I think the prospect still looks pretty good.
Look, when you think about emerging markets as a whole, you know, with global growth slowing, and you could argue there's less ammunition in the form of monetary policy and quantitative easing, that type of firepower, not much flexibility, you know, for interest rate cuts. I think debt's accumulated, so maybe less fiscal policy as well. Does EM look relatively interesting, you know, with faster growth, structural growth prospects, even though it's underperformed for quite some time for the last, you know, 10 years? Could, you know, the next 10 years be different?
Yes, I think it could be different. You know, the last 10 years, the S&P did really well because, you know, it started right out of the GFC, right? And EM, on the other hand, you know, it was coming off from a commodity-driven supercycle, right? So the starting point was very different. But if you look at the decade before that, right, it was actually a lost decade in the developed markets. And EM actually did fairly well, right? The EM did the per annum growth was 9% for that decade. And if you look at the 20-year period as a whole, EM did outperform developed markets. So going forward, right, I think you're right. You know, based on the higher growth, there are reasons to think EM will continue to perform well. But that said, you know, I think we should always give the caution that the EM is a place that you should expect volatility, just given the infrastructure, the institutions are not as stable. So I think with that kind of environment, the right way is to invest in countries where, you know, the debt situation is well managed, where the growth rate actually justifies the level of debt. And you want to invest in businesses that are well entrenched, have pricing power, and that's the kind of resilient organizations that will allow you to ride out these volatilities. You know, I think it's wrong to try to time the market. The right approach is to hold on to the best institutions and let time be your friend and let the long-term growth drive your performance.
Yeah, I think it's a good message. As we know, the growth trajectory is in place long-term, but returns do come in bunches. So look, that concludes our podcast this quarter. Thank you for listening. Please visit vontobel.com/AM. And we look forward to updating this podcast at the end of the first quarter of 2020. Thank you.
Disclosure. This recording is for information purposes only, and nothing contained in this recording should constitute a solicitation or offer or a recommendation to buy or sell any investment instruments, to effect any transactions, or to conclude any legal act of any kind whatsoever. Except as permitted under applicable copyright laws, none of this information may be reproduced, adapted, uploaded to a third party, linked to, framed, performed in public, distributed, or transmitted in any form by any process without the specific written consent of Vontobel Asset Management. To the maximum extent permitted by law, Vontobel will not be liable in any way for any loss or damage suffered by you through use or access to this information, or Vontobel's failure to provide this information. Our liability for negligence, breach of contract, or contravention of any law as a result of our failure to provide this information or any part of it, or for any problems with this information, which cannot be lawfully excluded, is limited, at our option and to the maximum extent permitted by law, to resupplying this information or any part of it to you, or to paying for the resupply of this information or any part of it to you. Keep in mind that past performance is not a reliable indicator of current or future performance, and forecasts are inherently limited and should not be relied upon as an indicator of future performance.